The Skeptic Podcast of Doom.
Hello all, and welcome to episode 2 of the Skeptic Podcast of Doom. Yeah, that's what I'm calling it. I thought nobody else said anything, any other names, or suggested anything to me. So I thought, let's keep it like my blog, nice and simple. So people can find it nice and easy. Or we can just call it SPOD. Just Skeptic Podcast of Doom. Just abbreviated a bit. Plus you can say it as an abbreviation. So SPOD. It's quite punchy as well. Pow. Alright. I've got a few things I want to talk about. Such as homeopathy. The apparent new excuse for guys not to go shopping. Which is pretty interesting, seeing as though I work in a supermarket myself. And the amazing new sea monster that was found recently. Well, the fossilised remains of one. It's pretty damn cool. Christopher Hitchens, which is a bit of a sad story. The oldest multicellular organism, fossil. And I like to talk about Weird Things, the podcast, and Weird Things TV. Let's go. Okay, so homeopathy. Well, I was reading an article today on news.bbc.co.uk, which is about how people have been petitioning the NHS to stop funding for homeopathy, and how it should no longer be marketed as a medicine in pharmacies, which it shouldn't be because it's practically water. Yeah, they had a conference and everything in Brighton, and where they have voted on the issue, and they dismissed it as nonsense, rubbish, which is pretty obvious, because it's harmful to patients, because it leads them away from allopathic medicines, I guess, and medicines that are actually going to help instead of just cure them of thirst. Which is a bit daft. Well, if it's water, anyway. It says here, homeopathy is a 200-year-old system of treatment that uses highly diluted substances. Which really, the substances are actually diluted to the point where they're not there, which is very silly. It's like, I don't know, you're allergic to honey or something. I bet they're just like, dilute it in water to the point where it's not even found there, and then say, oh, that's going to cure you, which obviously it doesn't because it's water. Here's a quote here. Dr. Mary McCarthy, a GP from Shropshire, said there was no evidence from hundreds of trials that homeopathy worked beyond the placebo effect, in which a patient gets better, but only because they believe the treatment will work and their symptoms clear up because of the psychological boost. But then again, things like that could work better over time anyway, because your natural immunity is actually taking care of it, I guess. That's just me talking there, not the quote. She added it could do harm by diverting patients from conventional medical treatments. Which is the truth. Well, there's a little bit here that says, what is homeopathy? There's a few bullet points. It says, involves giving people very dilute amounts of a substance that in larger amounts might produce symptoms similar to the condition being treated. For example, one remedy which might be used in a person suffering from insomnia would be made from coffee. Supporters believe homeopathy helps relieve a range of minor ailments from bruising to insomnia. Sorry if I'm laughing. But critics say it is no better than sugar pills. Tasty sugar pills. And people only get better because they believe the treatment will work, the so-called placebo effect. Apparently, this doctor also says, I think it's the same doctor. No, it's a spokeswoman. I'm getting it wrong. Apparently, a spokeswoman has pointed out that the amount of public money spent on it was very low. But she says the cost of homeopathy on the NHS is low. Just 0.001% of the £11 billion drugs budget. So the Department of Health said it was looking into the issue. The department is considering issues to do with homeopathic remedies in hospitals as part of the government's response to the Science and Technology Committee's report on homeopathy. The response will be issued soon. Ooh. Can't wait. For those who don't know anything about homeopathy, I suggest you search for James Randi on Google or YouTube, because he's got some awesome videos on there that's going to enlighten you about it all. So, go do it. Now. Here's a headline I was reading yesterday on the dailymail.co.uk website. The Daily Mail, not really. Great. Yeah. The headline is, "Now men have the perfect excuse to avoid shopping. It could make them impotent." Yeah. So it says, researchers have made the startling discovery that a gender-bending chemical compound is present on some till receipts. Bad stuff for those who work in a supermarket or whatever. Apparently, the levels of the hazardous substance bisphenol? Or BPA, that's easier to say. Yeah. Can be high enough to suppress male hormones in the body. Uh-oh. The compound is used to make ink invisible on thermally sensitive paper. And apparently, it says it's ingested by men when they handle the receipts and then touch their mouths or handle food. Well, why don't you just not put your hands straight in your mouth after you've been touching stuff in the supermarket? Say, anybody could have had their hands on whatever in there and they just putting your hands in your mouth. Ugh. See, I don't when I'm working. That's mank. Yeah. Professor Frank Sommer, a Berlin-based urologist, explained a substance like that could shift the balance of the sex hormones in men towards estrogen. So this leads to less sexual drive, encourages the belly instead of muscles to grow, and has a bad effect on erection and potency. Dun dun dun. BPA is also used in food cans, shower curtains, toys, and babies' bottles. Lovely. And apparently, it's thought it may produce early puberty triggering in girls, putting them at greater risk of cancer and diabetes. Huzzah! No, seriously. Crazy. And apparently they've claimed it's harmful enough for it to be banned or to have a precautionary ban against it. And apparently some manufacturers of baby bottles have stopped putting it in their products. But, of course, all the products will still contain the stuff. The US Food and Drug Administration supports its removal, which I suppose is pretty good. And, yeah, it's linked to disorders associated with metabolism, fertility, and neurodevelopment. Nice. So, yeah. Apparently that's a new excuse for men not to go shopping. Brought to you by the Daily Mail. Okay, the sea monster. Well, this is also on news.bbc.co.uk. It's a pretty good website at the minute, I think. And, yeah, the sea monster. Scientists have dubbed him, this creature. It's 12 million years old. And they've dubbed it Leviathan. Sounds mean. Apparently, it's thought to have been more than 17 metres long. So that's one beastie-ass monster dude. And apparently, it might have engaged in fierce battle with other giant sea creatures from the time. such as, you know, sharks and other whaley things. Leviathan was like the modern sperm whale in terms of size and appearance. But that's about all that it's similar with. Because whereas the sperm whales, it's quite passive. It just sucks in squid while it's swimming about. Just squid. The Leviathan was a mean, nasty, aggressive predator. Just hunting. Oh, yeah. Apparently, it could have hunted out large things such as dolphins, seals, and other whales. So it's a monster.
It's a monster!
Yeah, so yeah. Interesting to note, apparently, says some guy who I haven't caught his name, Dr. Christian de Mouzon, whatever, director of the Natural History Museum in Paris. He says it's interesting to note that around the same time in the same waters, there was another monster, which was a giant shark about 15 metres long. So it's possible that they may have fought each other, battling for the dinner. Yeah, apparently the researchers speculate that Leviathan was able to feed on very large prey, up to 8 metres long. So that's a big dinner. I don't know if I would be able to catch up with that. It would catch the prey in its huge jaws and tear it apart quickly and effectively with its humongous teeth. The jaws, well, the picture of the jaws on this picture on the website, it's got like a picture of a guy stood up, and its jaws are pretty much the same size as a guy when opened. So that's pretty scary. A 3 meter long fossilized skull of the creature was discovered by researchers in Peru, 2008, and that's just on a field trip apparently, which is pretty cool. And they thought it was a large whale, and they found out, they looked closer, and saw it was like a giant sperm whale with huge teeth. So that's really cool. The teeth were more than twice the length and diameter of those found in modern sperm whales. And they're on both the upper and lower jaws. So that's some nasty set of teeth. The discovery of the skull means that the Leviathan is not merely the stuff of myth and legend. It's actually one big badass whale beast. So yeah, they found this whale. Whale monster. They don't know why it died out, so they speculate that the ecology and environment changed so that the creature had to change its feeding habits, which is a bit lame if it likes its big meaty dinners. That probably led to the emergence of like gentler whales now, such as sperm whales, blue whales and stuff like that, which are all nice in a fashion, I guess, with the carnivorous side filled by killer whales as a conditions and the ecology swung back again for the whales to eat big meaty dinners. Apparently the authors of the report in the journal called Nature are all whale experts, and they're all fans of the novel Moby Dick, which is an awesome book. Suggest you read it. It's really good. They're that taken with the novel that they've dedicated their discovery to the author, Herman Melville, and they've given the creature its full scientific name, Leviathan Melville. Just so cool. Moby Dick. Yeah, that's your sea monster. Okay, so Christopher Hitchens. Yeah, I only want to say just a bit about this, because apparently he's been diagnosed with cancer, which is pretty bad. And is that to cut short a tour of one of his latest books? And has been advised by some physician that he must go under chemotherapy on his esophagus. Yeah, that don't sound very good. And is a bit of a chain smoker. And is apparently announced in 2008 that he'd given up tobacco by fear. Because his wife says he wants to live long enough to see his political enemies defeated. but still sneaking a smoking or two every now and then. Just wanted to say it's pretty bad news that he's got cancer. And if you haven't heard of him, look on YouTube for some of his rants against people, or watch him argue, or read one of his books, which is God Is Not Great, which is awesome. And if you haven't got time to read it, then I don't know, listen to George Schraub, who's got a song that is written about that book called God Is Not Great. Okay, so the oldest multicellular organisms. Okay, there were some fossils found in, I don't know when, it doesn't say. Apparently 2.1 billion years old, which is pretty damn old. The fossils could be the earliest known multicellular life form. It's pretty cool. 2.1 billion years old. They were widely seen as the first clusters of organized and communicating cells. The 250 or so irregular blobs, up to 12 centimeters in length, have scalloped edges, suggesting an organized and growing colony of coordinated cells. A guy called Stefan Bengtsson from the Swedish Museum of Natural History in Stockholm said, "Single cells don't normally grow to that size," says this dude. While other soft-bodied creatures of that age have long since vanished, these organisms were preserved because their body parts were replaced by pyrite, and the sediment around them wasn't buried or cooked. Which is nice. It's always nice not to be buried or cooked. A few things I don't want to happen to me, ever. It's likely thought that they emerged at this time to take advantage of a rise in atmospheric oxygen, which began around 200 million years earlier. Getting bigger as its benefits, it could have made the organisms more stable and better able to weather storms. So they're hardy little multicellular dudes. Yeah, which I think is pretty interesting. 2.1 billion years old. It's good stuff. Weird things. Here's a recommendation for y'all. Take a look at the Weird Things website, www.weirdthings.com, for information on all things weird. It's such an awesome website. They've also got a podcast, which is the Weird Things podcast. Yeah. And they've also got a TV video-y thing going off on YouTube. You can find that under Weird Things TV as the user. Yeah, the show's hosted by Justin Robert Young from itricks.com and from NSFW and many other things. There's Andrew Main, who's a magician, producer, and lecturer. As a magician, he's published over 40 books, so he knows his stuff, and he's worked for Penn and Teller and David Blaine, so he's not dumb at all. He's a really clever guy. There's also somebody called Matt Finley, who's a writer and cartoonist, and he's done some podcasts and NSFW podcast. Yeah, it's a really good podcast and video site, just a really good resource for all things weird. Really worth taking a look at. And the most recent video on there is about a schoolboy from England building his own Spider-Man machine. Pretty much made out of a Hoover, out of a vacuum cleaner to hold onto a surface. And there's also a video of him climbing a wall, which is really cool. And yeah, apparently his mum won't let him climb so high though. And she won't let him climb inside because he might damage the walls, which is a bit lame. So, good luck, spider kid. On my last podcast, I said I was going to watch Derren Brown. but Darren Brown has been and gone, and I couldn't get a ticket because I was paid too late in the month, therefore I wasn't able to afford a ticket. And when I did get some money to buy a ticket, there were no tickets that were seated together, so I would have had to go on my own, which would have been pretty boring, all on my lonesome. So I didn't go. So hopefully he comes back round again soon, because I want to see his show, because it looks awesome. But another show I want to go to watch is Penn & Teller. They're in London in July at the Hammersmith, and I think it should be like a combination of lectures and magical tomfoolery and just Penn and Teller goodness. So hopefully I really want to go watch them. Hopefully I'll get some pennies to go see them. I think the tickets range from upwards from £34-35, and I've even seen some tickets for like front close to the stage for about 300, going up to 1,000 or so. So expensive stuff. I'll probably be right at the back with my cheap tickets. Some more events I want to go to this month or later this year. The Skeptics in the Pub in Sheffield, which is on, you can find it on the website sheffield.skepticsinthepub.org. This month on July the 12th, which is a Monday, at Sheffield, the Showroom and Workstation on Paternoster Road. Paternoster Road. There's a guy called Michael Heap doing a talk, and he's doing a talk about suggestion and suggestibility and their relation to hypnosis, and demonstrating how one type of suggestion called the ideomotor effect can account for a number of unusual and paranormal claims and practices. So the ideomotor effect's basically divining rod sort of stuff, or Ouija board, etc. Oh, even says here. Says these include the psychic pendulum, very psychic, of course, the Ouija board, table turning, facilitated communication, and dowsing or water divining. Nice actions, Rach. Michael Heap is a clinical forensic psychologist in private practice and at Wathwood, Medium Secure Hospital in Rotherham. He's a founding member of the Association for Skeptical Inquiry, ASK, and is its current chairman and secretary. So yeah, that looks pretty cool. It's in Sheffield, July the 12th, which is a Monday, starting at 7:30. And for those who like Tracy King or Tim Minchin, she is helping release Storm, which is a Tim Minchin 9-minute beat poem, and he's making a film about it, and Tracy King is the producer of said film, and that's at Skeptics in the Pub, Sheffield, and that's in August, so that's one to look out for. Next week in Nottingham, at the Skeptics in the Pub in Nottingham, so nottingham.skepticsinthepub.org, I guess you guess, get the picture. This is at the Navigation, which is on Wolford Street, Nottingham. Tony Ewins is doing a talk, and it's going to focus on a number of investigations into psychic claims, including Christine Holohan and the murder of Jackie Poole. Interesting. Chris Robinson, the dream detective. And testing a parrot in Chicago for telepathy. A few demonstrations of trickery will be included, so that's pretty cool. And it says on the website, has appeared on a number of television and radio programs such as Kilroy, fantastic, Central Weekend Live, I don't know what that is, National Geographic, yay, Vanessa, Boo, Lowry, never heard of it, Everyman and the Heaven and Earth Show, never heard of that, but somebody's going to have heard of some of those. I don't watch that much telly, I guess. He poses as a tarot reader for Meridian Focus and an astrologer in the New Zodiac. His favourite was the Ultimate Psychic Challenge, which meant working with James Randi, which I'm pretty jealous of. And he's a founding member of ASK also, just like the last guy I said, who is Michael Heap. So yeah, that's an item worth going to. So check those out on the website. Okay, to finish off this podcast, I'm just going to do an advert for a friend who's doing some stand-up. It's going to be in Birmingham. It's Luke Condor. You can find him on Twitter at Luke of Condor. And he's doing some stand-up at the Hare and Hounds with plenty of other stand-up folk. And it's on the 11th of July. So get going there. I think it'll be a good laugh, good night out. So have a pop down to Birmingham. Hare and Hounds on the 11th. Lovely. So yep, that's it for this podcast today. Hopefully I'll get some more sorted and get some more stuff sorted. So in the meantime, just check out my website, lhymus.wordpress.com, or you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/@LukeHymus. HYMAS, for those wondering. All right. Cheers. Bye.